Good afternoon. I wonder if I could get some information from you. I'm a reporter at the Sacramento Bee newspaper, and they give your number down here at the police station to people calling to report UFOs.
Yes.
At the sheriff's office here, they give a number in Southern California, another place called the UFO Education Center. So anyway, I'm trying to work up a story on who runs the places and so forth. Are you a private outfit? Or
yes, we are.
Yeah, or a non-profit type organization?
Right.
Are you just one of the staff there, are you in charge of it? Or?
I'm on the staff, yes.
Yeah. I wonder, can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure.
How busy you are and how busy you've been recently, and maybe whether you've got any calls from down in the Sacramento or Northern California area?
Okay. Well, things have been rather quiet, really, for several years, and up until about, well, night morning before last, I guess,
uh-huh.
when everything broke loose in California. And we had several calls from the Sacramento-Stockton area,
uh-huh.
also from Orange County and Los Angeles County.
Uh-huh.
In fact, our calls were pretty frequent from about 3 a.m. right through to about 7 a.m. that morning. That would be the morning of the 22nd.
Okay, March 22nd, uh-huh. Okay. What was it they were reporting? Tell me.
Okay, well, in over the Los Angeles and Orange County area, there were two very brilliant objects moving across the sky from southwest to northeast. They were flying in tandem at what was described by some of the helicopter pilots here as about medium altitude, comparing it with aircraft flights. And they were flying in a horizontal flight trajectory, high rate of speed, and then they just, they didn't fade out, they didn't burn out, they just clicked out, just like turning off a light.
Huh.
And they did not leave a trail like a meteor would. They couldn't really explain it. They said it was quite spectacular. A lot of people saw that. And then up around the San Joaquin Valley area, or San Joaquin County area, around 5:15, there were more reports from police, specifically sheriff's cars, that observed for about 15 minutes two brilliant white objects maneuvering over the Sierra Nevada mountain range. They were not stationary. They were definitely on the move, just moving around, performing some crazy maneuvers and so forth. And we also had another call from the Colusa area, where a couple around 3:23 in the morning saw a huge disc-shaped object ringed with blue lights moving from southwest to northeast. That's about all we had for that particular morning, and then, of course, we had a few other scattered reports from around the country, which didn't amount to anything.
What does your center get into interpretation of these things, or do you just log these? Or
no.
What do you do after you get some information?
No, when we complete the investigation on any case, we evaluate the information, run it through a data reduction system, take that and catalog into the data bank, and then this information is compared with past reports, specifically the unknowns for the past 20 years, to see how they compare. And then, of course, this massive data which is accumulated is used in our various research programs. Okay, they come in three different categories. There you got the disc-shaped object, which is fits right into the description category for that particular type object. And then the one in Central California where the two lights were maneuvering around, this is very common. The only problem there is all the witnesses see is a light. They don't see any superstructure of any kind of a vehicle. Then the ones that passed over Southern California, why, this is quite common for rapid overflight. flights, even what we refer to as high flyers, which cannot be or do not fit into the category of meteor flights.
Since then, now with periodic spurts of
reports here and there, like from California. But when we have what we call a flap condition or a sudden activity which goes on for maybe weeks in a particular given area, why then we keep track of all this and try to see if there's a marked pattern between that and the last one and the previous one and so forth. But we have not found such a pattern, and we don't have an answer as to why it's the way it is.
Uh-huh.
We've tried to compare close planet oppositions and various astronomical positions of solar systems and so forth in comparison to ours, and we just haven't found any marked pattern of any kind.
Uh-huh.
So their reason for coming and going is just completely unknown.
One of the things that the people down in San Diego County, Southern California, told me was that, of course, they're convinced that these are kind of research flights from other places in space, but they seem to be convinced that these flights are originating from within our solar system. Is that one of the premises you're operating on, or does anybody have to feel that way?
No, considering the probes that NASA has made into the solar system, we're quite sure that the ports of origin are not from our system. I mean, we could be wrong on this, but we're going by what NASA has come up with, actual data. And so we feel that if they are interplanetary, then they are probably coming from other solar systems, nearby solar systems, and if you really want to get out way out into right field, why, we could even imagine that they would be coming in from other galaxies. Of course, the astronomers, you know, they put up a big fight against such a theory because of the tremendous mileage involved and distances. But our science is very, very young, and who is to say that we will not develop means of travel that could cover those distances in practically no time at all.
You operate on the premise that these are some sort of voyages of discovery from other places, or some sort of research or some sort of study missions that these beings are just coming to take a look at the Earth and maybe do the equivalent of photograph it or study it or something of this sort. How do the people in your group view what they so far from there?
Well, of course, these sightings have been made for thousands of years, and we feel that there's a constant program being carried on by alien visitors from many ports of origin, and that some may be just flybys and come in just out of curiosity. Others may be conducting constant surveillance of the advancement of mankind on this planet. But we do feel that there is a definite purpose. When they come here, they appear, just by their behavior pattern, to be here for a purpose.
Uh-huh.
We have seen in our various research projects that there appears to be various levels of technology involved. We feel that some of the visitors are more advanced through science and technology than others. We've made a very close study of the various types of vehicles and the types of apparent propulsion systems that they're using, and it's obvious that more are more sophisticated than others.
Have you ever gotten any reports of actual sightings by witnesses of the inhabitants of any of these crafts? Anyway, in recent any recent reports that somebody's seen?
No, the occupants.
Yeah.
No, we haven't.
So these things always remain just a little bit out of distance, avoid people to, at least to the point where they could see what was going on. Was inside and so forth.
Right.
Does this give people problems that are looking for ways of explaining this? In other words, if we set a probe to Mars, a manned probe or something, and discovered life there, we'd probably make some attempt to get out and look at it under a magnifying glass.
as we're concerned, because we've come up with a lot of information on our research. We feel that the problem of contact between aliens and Earth people involves magnetics, biomagnetics, evolution. We feel that there's an evolutionary gap. In other words, any race of people who are highly involved, well, let's say 5 or 10,000 years beyond us, I don't think there's going to be any comparison relating to their physical and mental development compared to ours. And our science is finding the human body has a regular biomagnetic and regular biomagnetic system associated with a biological clock. They're just getting into this. They don't know too much about it, but they know that it's there. And we feel that any alien being who is far advanced beyond us in evolution, that their bio system, the magnetic system, the biological clock, and the whole bit cannot blend with ours.
Or communicate.
There could be a communication problem also.
Yeah.
Now, there have been claims where individuals have said they have made contact. Well, we can believe part of these because we believe that there are some people on this planet who are much more advanced through this biological system than others, and they may be able to make contact. Now, we also believe that the system that controls or makes these vehicles move also involves magnetic fields of some kind, which, if they come into contact with the biomagnetic system around the human body, could be either fatal or cause serious injuries. And this, we feel, is one of the reasons that there are very few close approaches to witnesses when we compare the number of sightings that have actually been made. But it's a new science. I'm speaking of our regular orthodox science field now. It's a new science, and they're making some very mind-boggling discoveries in this, and we feel that this definitely has something to do with the UFOs.
Do you have a system there in your center of I don't know what you'd call it, but some sort of grading system that you, when you get a report of a sighting of a UFO, that you can give a certain amount of credence to it? Is there some way you can verify it, or how do you determine which calls are strictly based on nothing other than somebody's imagination, and which ones do you tend to put more relief in? In other words, if you get one from an Air Force pilot or something, do you tend to give it a little bit more, I think it's a little more substantial than one you might get from somebody who sounds like he's a half-gassed or something?
Oh, yes, yes. We would naturally give more priority to qualified observers. But this doesn't mean that a farmer out in the country couldn't come up with something just as valid, because when an individual calls in, and within about the first minute or two of that individual describing what they have seen, we can just about tell whether it's a hoax call or not. The descriptions, other just completely outside of the ordinary light descriptions, but when they start describing vehicles and they can see superstructure and so forth, we know what to look for in their description. If they have a very, very good background in the subject of UFOs, then they could perpetrate a hoax without any problem. But we have found that at least 95% of the people that report objects to us are diehard non-believers. They have never had any interest in the subject, and they know nothing about it. So when somebody calls up and they've got a quivering voice and they've had hell scared out of them, and they start describing something which that fits right into the category of all the data that we've collected, then we can be sure that the report is valid. And then, of course, this is backed up by field investigators making on-the-spot investigations, too.
Then how do you field check something? Do you just look for other witnesses, or do you maybe check with law enforcement people or something to see if other people have called in, or how do you go about it?
Well, whoever goes out to do the interviewing will depend. depending upon where the individual lives, they'll check neighborhoods and check with the news medias and check with law enforcement and anybody else, any other agency that might have got a call, well, they'll go to them and check it out. One of the main things is to get as many witnesses to any one incident that we can.
Manning your phone there 24 hours a day?
Yes, sir. This phone is answered by one of our staff around the clock. There's no answering machines. There's no telephone answering service. Qualified and very experienced people are here at all times.
My question, are the people who are the volunteers, are they specialized in any particular field themselves as far as jobs or vocations, or are they just people who are interested in UFOs?
Well, they've all got a great interest in and background in the subject. We have a physicist, and there's a professional astronomer, and we have an MD, and then there's a couple people associated with electronics, and the rest are just ordinary laymen.
Uh-huh. How about yourself? What do you do?
No, I'm retired.
Do you have any records on the number of calls you have gotten from Northern California over the years to date? Well, maybe I should ask you this. How large an area do you get calls from?
Oh, just the West Coast primarily, yeah.
Yeah, do they come in, do you have any way of knowing about how frequent the calls from Northern California are in comparison to other areas?
Well, I couldn't give you a definite answer. Let me put it this way, that we probably have more calls, well, since the center has opened, I'll say, we've had more calls from Northern California than any other area of the West.
Yeah. Does that mean anything to you in terms of your research?
Well, we've gone over that quite a bit, and there's been some personal interpretations, as some people feel that it could have something to do with many of the air bases down there, and then there's a theory that they may be watching, or a certain faction of these vehicles may be watching the earthquake fault zones.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of theories.
I can use your phone number and say that somebody could call out at any hour of the day and expect to talk to somebody who really knows UFOs.
Yes, absolutely.
And would be interested in, would take down the information.
Yes, there's somebody here at all times.
Okay, good enough. I really appreciate the information and pass it on to our readers.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay,